There we
go. Okay. It's Radio Mysterioso 000 here on June 1st of 2003. Your rent's due. Did you know that? Your rent's due. Just wanted to remind you of that.
But it's the first, so I got my food stamps and GR check, so it's okay.
You did? Okay, good. Can you use those to buy booze, food stamps? Or you have to take the extra money from them and then go and buy the booze with it?
Oh. I have a good food stamp story, but you go ahead.
Well, you can sell them outside the check cashing place. You know, and use that money. But no, theoretically, you cannot use government-issued food stamps to buy cigarettes and beer. Sorry, Greg.
Theoretically. Today on Radio Mysterioso, I have two guests, which I sent out an email a little bit to some people. Walter Bosley, former Air Force Office and Special Investigations agent.
Yes, agent.
And FBI agent.
Not an agent with the FBI, a counterintelligence specialist.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I must always be clear on that.
All right. What's the difference?
I was not an agent. I was a support employee, but I worked operationally on the street for the FBI.
Did you go to Quantico?
Yes, I was trained at Quantico for the surveillance job.
I grew up in Manassas.
Aha! Uh-huh. I spent a lot of time with the Borders in Manassas.
Former publisher of The Last Prom, A Great Scene, and director of Whispers from Space, a biography of late great, longtime UFO writer and prankster Gray Barker.
I just stopped by the area to say hi to Greg and see his guests. But yes, I grew up in Manassas, and we played a lot in Combat Village. Which, do you know what that is?
No.
The FBI has a training area that's Mock City, where they do.
Yeah, that's where the theater that has the Dillinger whole shootout thing.
And they do hostage training.
I trained there.
And we'd sneak in there at night, and there's tunnels underground. It's a lot of fun. But that area has changed a whole lot since 9/11.
I'll bet.
Yeah, the whole FBI. Well, anyway, so that's exciting.
Yeah.
Wasn't
no, it was. It was. I I was in that for so long. For me, it became, it's the norm. And sometimes you have to remind yourself, to the person outside of that, it is pretty cool sounding, So, but I try to be modest compared to some of the guys I know in that profession or that, I've worked with.
Well, anyways, I'm going to listen to Greg because Greg has Let's do it. Knows the question.
That's okay. You guys are here to talk. We can talk about anything. Actually, Walter was in the middle, he and I were in the middle of discussing what kind of UFO stories go floating through the national intelligence community, because people, for very good reasons, because they've been told to think that way, and that's all that they have access to, is that the government knows a lot about UFOs and flying saucers, and they're keeping all that information from us. And there's like some truth to that, and then there's a lot of surprising not truth to it too, or misdirection, which is what disinformation is about.
Perception management.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the phrase they like to use. And
is that the one they? Did you take a class in a few in in knocking over it? Pick that up before the maybe it'll start.
Before the building catches fire.
I just wanted. That's okay. I just wanted the fan pointed this way so we could all pull
this
off.
Way.
Yeah, there we go.
No, or you can move.
I'm
so you
fine.
Can, oh, are you? Okay.
I'm fine.
So well, I wanted to close the window because.
I think we talked last time too about. I mentioned it's my personal theory, and we've talked about it before about how they handed over the administration of dealing with the whole subject matter to a private entity because they're not required, like a federal agency, to release the information.
They farmed it out.
Yeah, they would farm it out to a contract organization that...
Like who? Most all jobs.
That would be proprietary information. And Constitution, they're not required under the Constitution to reveal it to the public what they know. So then the government has culpable deniability and can say, we don't know.
So what's the private firm that they're like the spook patrol that finds that gets the UFO?
Ralph's asking much better questions. This is good.
You've got a number you can choose from. I don't know which specific one it would be. What comes to mind to a lot of people's mind is Wackenhut, but I don't think they would be the ones who would handle
just
it. But there's an example
security.
Of an entity created to deal with security-related subjects with government bodies and entities, and yet is a private corporation.
Did the government do this because they don't take that subject seriously?
No, I don't know they did this for sure. this is my theory based on my experience with how compartmentalization and how classification and keeping things secure works. To me, it's a very logical solution to, you know, how do we give ourselves the deniability, you know, and not have to deal with administering it ourselves.
How did you feel about it? Was that going on when you were in either organization?
When you're now, you know, when I was in OSI, you become aware, you learn, like for instance when I was at Wright-Patterson, you know, you become exposed to the history of what was there during this, during Project This, Blue Book, for example. Mm-hmm. You know who there at the base was the guy in charge of the library of data relating to this.
Right.
But then you also learn what everybody else knows now. The stuff gets closed down and moved somewhere else.
Right.
Mostly what you learn that, and the beauty of learning it this way is that there's no way for me to verify or confirm to you other than telling you, you know, that most
because
of what you learn
is because you didn't know.
Because I can or didn't know. Well, because you're told things by people who are in the position to know, but it's not like they show something to you on a piece of paper. Or
right.
It's not like they take you in a building and say, hey, there it is.
Right.
You know, but the other things you know, you're able to put a puzzle together. And, you know, I've been very clear with you on what I,
right.
As a personal theory. Uh-huh. You know, based on my experience with how the system works.
Uh-huh. It's a big question, but what is your personal theory about the thing I brought at the beginning? Like, what is in regards to what does specifically, probably the people that have the most to do with it are the military, specifically the Air Force, because they deal with things in the air.
Sure.
But what do you think their perception is in their, as an organization, at least with people that know what's going on, what is their perception, experience, and the way they deal with UFO sightings or contacts, whatever may come their way?
Officially, as we know, they don't deal with it. Unofficially, it's an accepted thing among those who have given me the impression and have convinced me that they're involved with knowing things. It's an accepted thing that's been accepted for years, and it's dealt with and interacted with in whatever capacity they're assigned to interact with
and
it.
When you say accepted in what way? As
the reality of it.
Or
yeah,
but there's so many different levels to that.
Mm-hmm.
Are you talking about many levels, or just that there are unknowns? We know there are unknowns. Because it goes all the way from that to cooperating with aliens and making deals and blah, blah, blah. I mean, to the most paranoid fantasy you could imagine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or reality.
Hey, look, I'm confused. Okay, look, I'm Joe
so
Citizen, right? I'm Joe Citizen, right?
Right.
I see a UFO, so I think to call the FBI.
Right.
So I call the FBI, and they patch me through to this outside agency you're talking about, right?
No, they don't do that. No. I wasn't being clear on that. You see a UFO, and actually, I would call the Air Force, or, you know, if you call the FBI would tell you to call the Air Force, or they would contact the Air Force.
Okay.
This, in my theory, this organization, they're not going to make it clear to the public that this little contract corporate entity is administering, about that.
I was trying to adjust it for you.
Is administering this, the secrecy of this. It's something that they really, you know, kind of don't want people to know. That's why they shifted it over there in the first place, so they can just deny knowing anything about it. Personally, based on what I have seen in my experience, I do believe that about 90%, I'll go as high as 90% of what people are seeing that they're convinced is from another world, is likely not. I think it's our own technology. I do believe that.
You can adjust that one down so you don't have to bend over to the microphone.
Yeah, and that I base on, you know, personal experience with being...
Thought you could adjust that one down.
There it is.
Okay. Personal experience being in the U.S. Air Force, and you know, and just working for the government, and knowing how we secure programs. When you're a security guy, it's a lot easier for you. For instance, in the Air Force, it's there's a special section that handles what we call materiel security, and it's their job, for instance, to keep the 117 stealth fighter secret, which they did successfully. That was an operational aircraft from the late 70s. The public didn't know about it till the Grenada invasion, really, the details about it. And it wasn't acknowledged until, 1989. That was a success. their job was to keep that classified and secret. They did a great success. Now, what makes your job easier is let the public think it's the from Mars or from, you know, SETI Alpha 5 or Sirius. Let them think that we're too dumb as human beings. You know, the United States Air Force, they're not sharp enough. They're just the dumb old military. They can't do this advanced stuff. I'm telling you, they're doing it.
I worked on a boat in Chicago once, and there was like an air show, not an air show, but the Air Force did a little thing, and a jet flew over at night that was so fast. I mean, it boggled my mind that I would have thought it was from another world or something. It's just like,
it's that way when you first see the 117 fly. You're just, I mean, in broad daylight, you see this thing, and you're like, what the hell? You know, is that Batman? I mean, and it's well ahead of the sound coming out of it, and I mean, more so than the average jet, and you're like, wow. But at that point, you know, okay, it's a real aircraft. Now, imagine seeing that before it's been acknowledged. It's just like you said, you're going to think, gee, that's got to be from space. Because see, what they'll use, these security guys, is they'll use the negative PR to their benefit. If the public wants to be, you know, anti-government, and, you know, the DOD is nothing but a bunch of war hawk idiots, blah, 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 and that works to secure something, they're going to use it. The OSI agents that are securing stuff for the Air Force, they're going to use it. I would. It'd be like, oh, they think we're too dumb to do it? Okay, let them think it's somebody or something else. So, you know, you use that to your benefit. You use whatever you can to your benefit. It makes less work for you, because if they're not going to believe it's what it is, then your job's easier. But I would say 90% of what people are seeing, you know, the stuff over Mexico, I don't think that's from another world at all. I think it's from...
All that Mexico City stuff.
Mexico City stuff, right.
Is that around the volcanoes down there?
No, the city, right downtown, all the UFO sightings that are... Now, I will caveat, you know, among the most impressive of the UFO video that's out there, you know, none of us here know for sure if that was authentic or real, but wow, you know.
That's... our government or Mexican government?
There are nearest neighbor to the south there. It could be ours. It could be us in conjunction with the Mexican Air Force. I mean, it could be anybody.
So what is that? What are they seeing?
If those videotapes are not faked, and that is what it looks like, which it looks to my eye like...
I haven't seen the video. What's the video?
You've never seen those. They're awesome.
Yeah, they're called...
Where would I see it?
There's a bunch of different ones out. There's one called Messengers of Destiny, I think.
Mm-hmm.
John Shirley, the cyberpunk writer, told me that he had looked into it and first he was very amazed by it, then was convinced by a Hollywood effects guy that most of that, if not all of it, could be done...
So it could be faked.
So it could be faked on video.
Oh, good job then. Whoever did. If it's faked, it's a hell of a job. If it's real...
If it's showing something that's actually flying in the sky, a lot of the tapes are pointing and reacting. There's
sure.
other people, and then you know, 30 or 40 or 50 people mm-hmm. around town videotape the same thing from different. Mm-hmm. So there is something up there in the air, unless everybody's faking.
And I think it's Earth-based technology. It's either one of the superpower governments, or then you get into some of the stuff Dave Childress and others have written about that there's some other group here that has this technology.
And what are they doing floating over Mexico City?
Whitney
Strieber said it was to prepare people for something or other.
Whitney Strieber?
Yeah.
Was he the guy that was in the room next to us at the Roswell thing in 97? Remember we were shoving stuff under his door and like banging on the wall?
No, that was Stanton Friedman.
Oh, people don't like him, do they?
Some people do and some people don't. Mosley doesn't like him. He likes him. He's just like this friendly rivalry.
Yeah, yeah, okay. I wasn't
no,
sure
Whitley
that.
Strieber wrote the
Communion
Transformation and what was the last one? Whatever, the trilogy of alien
right.
abduction novels. Plus a very good one called Majestic, which is probably, it's as far as I can tell, the most accurate record of as far as you could get with figuring out what the U.S. government, how they deal with the UFO subject.
I'll have to read
and
that.
And it's kind of a fictionalized account, deals with a few different characters, but he did that so he could take all these things he was hearing from people and kind of put it out there, kind of like Jacques Vallée did with Fast Walker when he wrote that. So, Earth-based technology, but we don't know about it. Well, obviously, you know, a lot of people listening right now know that, like you said with the F-117, is that something that you don't know is going on will
is
be revealed in 5, 10, 15, 20 years.
Right.
And at that point, people go, oh, so that's what that was.
I will state
although
this.
Although the 117 doesn't go backwards and forwards and float and go in behind clouds, then drop below and get out of the way of other planes.
Well, I guarantee you, if your Air Force comes out and says the F such and such whatever is the most advanced aircraft we have, you can bet that secretly there's something at like least
a generation 20
to 40 years in our logical, technological thinking ahead of that that is classified.
But don't
I will swear by that.
Don't so many people must work on that project that word would get out?
There's the common misconception in the public. Everybody thinks, oh, it's like the Kennedy assassination. Oh, come on, somebody would have spilled the beans. Well, first of all, there have been people tried to spill the beans on that. That's where compartmentalization comes in. You can have 10,000 people work on something and not know the big picture of it. You can literally have that. If you've ever worked in that system where compartmentalization is a part of it, and when you're talking national security things, you can have a number of people work on something and not really know the big picture.
So 100 guys are working on the wing,
uh-huh,
and like, you know, 40 guys are working on the nose,
mm-hmm,
and so somebody just...
And one or two people know what the entire thing is.
Mm-hmm.
But wouldn't the 100 guys working on the wing go, what's this for?
Sure.
And of course they could tell them whatever the hell they want.
They can tell them whatever they want. Exactly, Greg.
It's for a new power generator that we're trying to make small so we can have airborne lasers.
Or it's like, certainly it's for an aircraft, but gee, this is what, you know, it's just for this aircraft here, and that's what it's going to look like.
And all those jobs are contracted out, like Boeing may be doing the wings, and somebody may...
Yeah, you got different contractors doing different parts. I mean, and there's some stuff that I... you know, there's details I'm not at liberty to discuss about, you know, certain aircraft that I've never seen people publicly or people I know they've even hit upon that's part of why it works.
Well, hold on.
And
it's
what pretty
you
impressive.
Not at liberty to discuss? What?
Classification, you know, well, secrecy agreements.
Yeah, I signed a classification agreement when I worked on a Michael Jackson video, but I don't give a fuck.
Michael Jackson video is a bit different than one of the most advanced aircraft of the United States. Here's the deal.
But I'm saying, are you still an employee of whatever? I mean, what?
No. But when you sign those agreements, you know, you don't break that.
It's like, you know, 20
years. It's for life.
Or life, yeah.
It's for several years, if not your entire life.
So, okay, if you talk about something that you're not supposed to, what is somebody going to bust down this door, meet you
at
the car?
No. Here's how it works. If somebody hears this and I've talked about something I really shouldn't talk about, that I know I'm not supposed to be talking about, that I signed paper stating that I would not talk about such and such details of, they hear it. Yes, I would hear from my former employees, whoever it was I was working for. Employers, who I broke the agreement with. And they would send agents to me and remind me of my responsibilities, and
unless it was so egregious that it's
oh yeah, there's certain things that I would be, you know, they'd want to talk to me a little bit more than just remember you signed something. Yeah, but you agree to that. That's the nature of that business, and that's where the compartmentalization, and that's where people not talking about this stuff, that's where it comes in. I mean, you sign this stuff, and you know that you could go to jail with certain things for the rest of your life, for a number of years, and you know that, so you're not going to talk about that, you know, particularly if you got a wife and kids and you got a life, you know, particularly if you're out of that, why screw up the life you've started by actually talking about the thing I just mentioned that I'm not at liberty to discuss? You know what, it makes no difference on this show or the conversation that we're likely to, you know, continue in those particular details. It makes no difference with what we're talking about. It's an example of...
Yeah, it's not a UFO technology thing.
Works.
It might
be
some.
Yeah, it's just something that makes the thing work, and you know, more power to it. It's a wonderful machine. If you're looking at it technologically, it's incredible. I mean, they put that thing up on the pylon when they tested its radar signature.
The pylon?
The testing pylon. There's a pylon.
It's this huge tower out at
big tower in the desert, and they
Edwards Air Force Base or near it.
Right, and they put the airframe, the shape of the aircraft, the body of it, or whatever you want to call it, the airframe on top of it, and they blast the radar at it, and then they pick up its signature. And this was, I don't know if you've ever seen a 117 stealth fighter, for example, but, you know, it's a pretty good-sized chunk of metal, pretty good-sized airframe. It read the size of a single sparrow, I believe.
Wow.
Yeah, and so.
Then they start the engines up, and you said you really couldn't see anything except maybe you could see the heat signature. Possible? No, you couldn't even see that.
I've seen them. I've seen
like
the things operational, and you know I've seen them at an air show, and it's and I've you know been exposed to some of the data involved with it.
Are they working on time travel?
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up.
I mean,
that's
seriously.
A favorite subject of mine. Oh, let me throw one out at you. A source of mine once told me, flat out, and you guys are just going to clobber me for this, but I don't care. You brought it up. Let's talk about it because this is great. There's a lot of open evidence for this. My source's statement, they've been doing time travel since the beginning of the 20th century. Now, I personally think time travel.
They meaning the government.
People that are looking into it.
People, you know, scientists that, yeah, were employed, you know, by the government or eventually employed by the government. But I think the time travel issue explains a lot of alleged UFO flying saucer incidents. I'm a believer in that scenario.
My brain just gets confused at this point, you know.
You know, but in what way? You know, time travel. See, my idea of time travel, and you may change it this evening, and anybody else that's listening here on killradio.org on Radio Mysterio. So even though I don't really have to do that, my idea of time travel is that the most efficient and probably the only way to do it is through your mind, not like getting in a machine and starting it up and chugga chugga chugga.
I was not told the method. I was just told it's been being done.
I can't explain it because I went into it with a parapsychologist one time for quite a couple of hours.
So, yeah. Walter, you believe that time travel is a reality?
Wow. I have
Belief's
embraced
a weird
it,
word.
Yeah. Belief's a weird word. I have embraced that time travel is a reality because of things I've been told, things I've seen, things I've experienced. Things
so, okay,
I've
help
read,
me out here. So, okay,
together.
Kenneth Arnold sees a flying saucer in 1947. Now, that's because of time travel.
Not necessarily, no. Kenneth Arnold sees those discs, and that is...
They were actually chevron shaped.
Yeah,
they looked like stealth fighters,
yes,
actually.
They did, actually. That is the guys, and I say the guys, whoever it was, our government, or there's that Marconi group that, again, that's another whole subject. A group of scientists that were developing advanced technologies, and I think what he saw was whoever has been flying these things that don't belong to the governments. Whoever it is on Earth, or in Earth, who flies these things that do not belong to the government, Kenneth Arnold either saw government flying objects or
from the
other
future.
Entity. Not necessarily. Not necessarily. Some. Yes, it could have been the time travelers, if it's an aircraft-based technology that allows time travel, whatever system they're using, it could be that, because not all the UFO sightings, as we know, are the aircraft-looking objects. Some of them are just appear in the sky as an object, or on the ground, they just kind of appear and then disappear. Like in the Star Trek movies when the Klingons use the cloaking device, that matches the description of some of the UFO experiences people relate.
Why would our government be interested in time travel?
Oh my God, why wouldn't they? Go back and influence events, go forward, see what, you know, how it affected you in the long run, go back, readjust. I'm an advocate of, let's do it.
My brain
just like
a hard
cloning,
time
let's do it.
Conceptualizing that, like... You know, space goes on forever. I have a hard time.
It's pretty wild, isn't it?
And I don't,
well, here we sitting right now, I think I understand what Walter's saying. Here, us sitting right now is what is possible. Everything behind us spreading out is what has happened. Everything in front of us influences what comes down that tube. Mm-hmm. If you're thinking about time as flowing from, you know, future to past and in mm-hmm. one direction, yeah, it works that way.
But time and history are circular. This is what I've been taught.
Oh, and in what way?
You're asking me the same question I want to ask my...
okay.
Circular. Let's see. There's been descriptions of it where it is on reality's on a circular kind of bend, the shape of everything, and if what you can do is...
This is a conceptual thing. You can't actually
conceptual
turn a camera on and see it in space.
Imagine time is like a donut, and time and space are like a donut, and we're at one point on the donut, and if we have the right technology or the right craft, whatever you want to call it, the right vessel, we can hop from our part of the donut across the hole to another part of the donut, and that's either the future or the past.
Right. That fits in with my idea that everything that's ever happened and is going to happen is already exists.
Already exists or happens
for all time. Every
possibility.
Time is just what we use because we have to live and we get old, so we see time that way. But time and causality and all that. But my idea is that it's everything that could possibly happen has already happened, and it's just there. It's like you can go over here, you can see something to our mind that'll happen 5 minutes in the future, but it doesn't necessarily.
Didn't we talk about the
eyeglasses
last time I was here?
Eyeglasses.
The discovery in the cavern in the southwest?
No.
Oh, Walter's going to get weird and wacky. Here goes my credibility.
You haven't before? What's going on?
This
is much better than Art Bell, isn't it? Isn't it?
He's gone now. What? There's some other fool.
Why did Art...
George
Norrie. What's the story behind that?
Yeah, he was having problems with his back. Was his...
So it was a health thing, or was
he... Yeah, he said he was like on his back in the studio on painkillers.
But George Norrie is... He's here in L.A., right?
No, he's in St. Louis.
And Art Bell was in Nevada.
Right.
Vegas, yeah.
But I like listening to that show once the other night. It's just stupid. It's like somebody will call up and say, I'm possessed by the devil. And he'll go like, oh, okay, you know what...
So it's not the same as when Art was on?
I never really listened to it. I only started listening like right before the year 2000.
We'll get back to the glasses in a second.
He kept selling shit, the Y2K. And it's just, I don't know, I've never been impressed.
The wind-up radio with the magnet in it. Which
the Bayesian
cool,
radio!
I kind of like those
wind-up
radios.
I'm sorry, I get off track. But anyway.
That's okay. I mean, the new guy is a neophyte, and he stays a neophyte, and he never asks interesting questions. And besides, if somebody comes... See, most radio hosts would say, you're full of crap. A good radio host will say, tell me more. Art Bell will egg him on and get him to go and direct him in a direction that is interesting to the audience, whether it's full of crap or not.
Right.
That's why I kind of enjoyed it. He wasn't as good at it later. I kind of liked it earlier on, but that's the way
he lets people go on, and that's entertaining.
Yeah,
itself,
yeah.
Right?
George Norrie just keeps asking questions, letting people say whatever they want, and it's unfocused. It seems to me.
Well, yeah, the kind one night I listened to
very much unlike this show, which is very focused right now.
Anyway, so somebody found some glasses, and what's
in
going on?
I'll tell you a story. Okay.
All right.
We all know about Carlsbad Caverns, and there's the tourist aspect of it. You can go there, and they're huge, and wow, that's really impressive. It's a national park.
The bats come out.
What I have heard is that the larger cavern, the really huge one that is below the tourist cavern level, was actually discovered decades ago. Interestingly enough, discovered in my recollection was sometime in the 40s.
Sometime in the late 40s.
Southwest, New Mexico. Imagine that. And there were relics.
In these caves.
People living down there, relics.
First, where did you hear this?
My source.
Okay.
So
you're going to hate me, but I'll tell you what. When this source
I already
dies,
hate you, dude.
I know. I'm sorry.
I don't even know you, and I fucking hate you. It's your source. I mean, what? Why can't you tell us who?
My mentor, my professional mentor. And when he shuffles off his mortal coil, I'll gladly tell you his name.
What can you tell us now? I mean,
out of respect to him and his life.
And he asked you not to say anything. Okay,
yes.
I respect that.
Go ahead with the cavern story. This was in the late 40s.
And I'll leave this up to you to decide whether you want to believe it or not. Yeah, late 40s, they found the relics.
Geological Survey?
USGS, Smithsonian.
Smithsonian, yeah.
The same guys that explored the stuff in the Grand Canyon in 1908.
They found some relics. What relics did they find?
They found relics. Among the relics was a pair of what we would call eyeglasses, wire-framed eyeglasses. However, these lenses and these eyeglasses, they didn't appear to be optical at all. They were just plain glass and didn't appear to do anything for
vision.
They
were clear, though.
Right. Now, the one thing they noticed about these glasses were that in each lens there was a very thinner than a hair wire running horizontally through the middle of each lens.
And they weren't bifocals.
Right. And
not normal.
The story, as I was told, was that these were in a lab and they had been studying them and they couldn't figure out, what are these for? We don't know yet. But while doing other studies, with light and some other things. A light happened to go through. Let me back up here. A guy's working in the lab where these glasses are. He looks on the wall, and what he sees on the wall is projected an image of a scene that appears to him from some ancient era. You know, and at first he's thinking, okay, who's projecting the movie here? Okay? And he, you know, he's in the lab, he looks around, and that's when he discovers a beam of light going
just like
through the
sunlight
lens.
Sunlight or something.
Sunlight or artificial light through the lab is catching these lenses, and what's being projected on the wall is this scene from, you know, some ancient time. And based on that, they figured out that these glasses were a tool used to view different eras of time, that there were events recorded in that wire. This is the story I was told. I'm not saying I believe this 100%. I'm saying from somebody who's never told me an untruth, a lie, ever. And some of the stuff he's told me, I have watched over time, I've been able to confirm, yeah.
Well, okay, I'm going to represent the we got 10 listeners now, right? The four that are severely retarded. I'm going to take care of those folks.
Okay.
How did these glasses get there?
They estimated they'd been there, left there by the civilization that lives down there, or lived down there at the time that the cave was inhabited. You're familiar with the Hollow Earth theories and any of that? This stuff's been going around for a long time.
Okay, yes. Where are the glasses now, according to your source?
Oh, locked away. I don't know if the Smithsonian's got them.
Why not tell the general public about these glasses?
Why not?
Yeah.
Because it would upset what they want the general public to believe.
Plus, you know, if you have something somebody else doesn't, if you know something or have something somebody else doesn't,
that's
that
power.
Gives you power.
Knowledge
over
is
them.
Power. Intel is power.
Okay, we keep saying they.
In this particular case, your government. Your government. Our government.
So, like, society would just crumble and people would go crazy and there'd be anarchy if we knew about these magic glasses.
The thing is, we are of a certain intellectual level. You guys are probably, I would venture to say, on a higher intellectual level than I am, certainly. And
don't say that, Walter.
Well, and we wouldn't crumble. I think we'd go, cool, this is neat. I believe there's more to it than just, oh, they think everything's going to crumble. I think it goes more to what Greg was saying, that the knowledge is power thing, you could get into a whole another radio show on, you know, okay, if there's people living on this planet that most people don't know about, what would the benefit of keeping that secret be? Well, you know, okay, we'd make a treaty with them, and we'd ally with them, and any technology, you know, the usual typical stuff the governments like to do. And, gee, if we know about them and say the Chinese or the Russians or so-and-so don't, which is foolish to think, or they might know about them, but if we're in with them...
So, okay, with these glasses, I could put them on now and I could see into the past.
Into the past, yeah.
Or at least
according
you could
to
have
what I was
some
told.
Shine some light through them.
So then,
once you figure out, and the way things are told, it's like, okay, after that, they figured out how these things work. And, yeah, I'm no dummy. Well, how do they work? You know, and you get a response like, you know...
So
you're not going to be told
so
that.
So then the glasses were made by somebody in the future, so this is getting...
Not necessarily in the future, in the past. You see, the history of this Earth is not what we're taught in school. I firmly believe that. The evidence is there for that.
Okay. Can we talk about your source a little bit? I mean, identify who it is, but...
Sure.
Where did he work? What kind of work did
almost
he... I mean, why should I believe your source?
You're
I mean,
right,
I
why should
you? That I, you know, you're not bullshitting me. It's
right.
Like, I don't really know you, but... But
all this stuff could be
source.
Told to me that as bullshit for me to believe, too.
What's that?
All this stuff could have been told to me as bullshit to deceive me, too. I acknowledge that. It could be. However, I got involved with the source in the mid-80s, and I will tell you there's certain things that he's told me that sounds almost as wacko or just as wacko as this stuff that I have seen, ooh, this is interesting.
Yeah.
This comes
and
out.
And the other
that
thing is,
out.
Like, what if you had your best friend in the world or somebody even, like, maybe in your family, like a grandfather or whatever, somebody you really trusted, your wife, whatever, and they told you weird stuff along with, you know, we have $800 in the bank or I'm not cheating on you. You tend to believe them because they haven't steered you wrong on anything else.
So this guy hadn't steered you wrong. He wouldn't.
He's never steered me wrong, and he retired with almost 50 years in the intel business.
What is intel? What is that?
Intelligence.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Which could go either way, I admit. Either
this is too much to say intelligence, right?
Yeah.
Too much of your time is taken up.
Either, you know, that says, well, gee, he might be in the position to know these things, or, boy, that business, he's definitely lying to you, you know, because there's a little of both. I mean, I've been in the lying business myself, you know, when I was an agent. You have the legal right to, what's the word, you can use deceit and trickery.
So how do we know that it's not your job right now just to come and perpetuate
falsities? You're right, you don't know. You don't know. You don't know. I mean, people that know me, I mean, Greg hasn't known me that long, I mean, but he doesn't know. None of you know. All I can tell you is that I'm more, you know, where you guys are coming from, where I'm interested in this, and I want to know about it.
Yeah.
But you guys don't know. I mean, all you can do is take my word and watch my behavior.
Yeah.
And try to take the things I say and look into them in your own way and see if you can find anything to substantiate. Part of the reason I'm sharing it with you is because, yeah, I'd like other people to maybe look into this stuff and see if they can come up with substantiation that I can't find or isn't shared with me. That's part of sharing it. Some of the stuff I'm telling you I was told years ago, and I just kept it, you know, to myself until, you know, now there's a point where, you know, my source is getting close to, you know, he's older, his health isn't that great. You know?
It's funny that I've told Walter this, I noticed this as working on this book I'm doing on, a lot of it has to do with Air Force intelligence, especially like in the early 80s, it's that Benowitz thing. I noticed a lot of people I'm talking to, former intelligence people, military people, either they won't talk to me. However, the ones that will talk to me and tell me, you know, like Walter, maybe not quite as much, the ones that will talk to me just happen to be members of, like, Fortean societies, civilian UFO, and it's like, if they were in the government and they knew all this stuff, why do they join a civilian UFO organization when they quit? It's not because they're working for the government anymore. Why do that when you're not getting paid?
That's right.
I think the reason is because they think they can find other pieces of the puzzle that
exactly.
they saw when they were in the military that might have come out, and it's just a personal quest for them. I mean,
yeah,
I talked to a guy that
exactly.
was in the NSA. He should know that. He goes, well, the NSA didn't really do very much with UFO stuff. We were just interested in communications. However, people in the agency used to bring me news reports, or if a communication came in that looked
yeah.
like it was interesting, they'd hand it to me.
It's
but they
compartmentalized.
Didn't really care. And it's compartmentalized. There may have been somebody in the NSA that cared dearly about it, but he never
exactly.
found out about it.
Exactly.
And he wants to know that now.
That's why I went into my profession. I was interested in this stuff for years before I started working with the government. I was going to go into movies and be a movie director until my mentor got a hold of me. 39.
You wanted to be a movie director?
I'm in love with film and writing and stuff like that. And then my mentor, but I, you know, have these other interests as well. And then my mentor got a hold of me and...
Mentor. Is that your source?
That's my source.
Where did you meet your mentor?
Yeah, at home. The associated family friend.
Oh, and he said, like, come in. How old were you when you fell under his spell?
That I like how you put that, because that's probably very accurate right there. That in itself is a story, but the first time he influenced me that I, you know, my awareness of him in my life was when I was, that would have been, I'm sorry, I'm doing a brain dump on the year here, 79.
So you're
yes,
a teenager, a young
79.
Teenager.
Yeah.
79 when he came to visit us, and what was interesting was he came to visit us, we didn't discuss any of this stuff, none whatsoever. None whatsoever.
So
and then several months later, I had the most interesting single experience of my life. He was not around when that happened. But then a few years later, he started coming around and teaching me about these things we're talking about.
Okay, so at 16 years old and 79, you're all like, oh, Star Wars, you want to be a film director. And your mentor saying, hey, you want fantastic, come into this biz.
Yeah. Kind of like in the commercial
Dreamcatcher.
The
Intel biz.
Yeah. Yeah, he says, he goes, if you're interested in this stuff and you want to know what's going on with it, you'll like this.
Now, did he work for the government?
Yes.
All his life he's worked for the government.
Yeah, he started in, he was in the 101st Airborne. Ooh, there I've gone and given the closest to identifying. You can look up the roles of the 101st Airborne and try to figure out
what
this guy
is. So what was his first suggestion for you at age 16 in 1979? Go to this college?
No. He didn't discuss this at all. He didn't. All he did was come to visit, and he was around for a few days.
No, but I understand. But that's what sort of persuaded you to get into another line of work.
Well, I know I was already in college. I was already halfway through college when he started talking to me about these things, and he starts subtly. I'll put it to you this way: later on in my career, when I got into a certain specialty as an agent, I was able to look back and realize the techniques he was using to recruit me are ways you recruit other people to come into things and do things you want them to do.
I wish somebody would have recruited me.
Walter's doing the same thing to me, but it's too late because I'm the same age.
I'm 37. I'm a little younger.
I'm 3 weeks younger.
I'm just trying to share pieces of puzzle I've had for years and see if anyone, you know.
Yeah, look how far Walter's got. He's still asking you and I questions. He knows things, but, you know, he knows like this. He doesn't know this part too.
Have you ever been legitimately scared?
Scared?
Well, okay. Talking the way you do about what you're doing, like that somebody might want to quiet you. Did your mentor or source ever talk about that? Like, look, man.
Yeah, he told me that I would be.
I sometimes feel like somebody's watching or listening or blah 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 blah. Like,
did my mentor say or did I say that? You're saying.
I'm not sure even what I mean.
My mentor is the most fearless, strongest man I've ever personally known in my life.
I guess what I'm saying is this by trying to put the puzzle together, by talking about what you talk about and talking to other people.
No, I believe he wants me to do
that. Somebody might try to quiet you.
They'll let me know. Believe me.
Before they permanently quiet you.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah. I'll be reminded of my responsibilities.
The octopus guy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was
warned multiple times to cut it out.
Yeah.
Over and over again.
By who?
By the people in the octopus, I guess, right?
Yeah, by people, you know.
The people with the best interest to keep it quiet.
Did you ever see a photo of that crime scene?
No,
actually, no. A suicide scene or whatever.
Yeah, no, yeah.
I haven't.
I haven't seen a photo of it.
Because I think it's
Ken might have one if he wants to call us at 213-252-0998. Anybody want to call 213-252-0998? We'll put you on, and you can ask Walter and Ralph questions.
But I'm saying that the Feral House is republishing The Octopus recently.
Oh, good, okay.
And I think that's on the cover.
Wow, I'd like to see that. I'll look out for that.
He supposedly slit his wrist in the bathroom of a hotel in West Virginia, right?
Something to do with poison, too, right?
I don't remember.
Or was it just the wrist?
It was just the wrist.
Why are you so sure that you'll be asked repeatedly to shut up before, like, we just take you out?
Well, I'll tell you right now, I'm not telling you anything that I know will get me in trouble. Some of those guys talk about stuff that their sources have told them absolutely do not. I'm telling you about things. I'm not gonna tell you about stuff I've been told absolutely not to talk about. I'm not going to do it. Not at this point.
Because you're scared of...
Because I'm aware. I'm aware that I would be, number one, violating a trust. Number two...
Of what, the government?
Yeah, well, you know, your government's not entirely evil, you know? I mean, let's be realistic here. They're not... The whole government is not entirely an evil thing. You do have evil, rotten, no-good, untrustworthy elements in our government. I think we all agree with that. On both sides of whatever
party...
Think
of any job you've had. There's some nice people there, some cool people, there's some dicks.
It's like
the
X-Files.
Some of them run the place, and some of them are just running around.
Not to get cheesy, but it's like the X-Files, you know? You got Skinner, who's really, you know, a good guy, who's a supervisor, and then you've got this guy who, you know, is a really rotten, low-hand part of the conspiracy. And then you've got the other guys that really are just bureaucrats that don't care either way and will go either way depending upon what their career wants of them. And I'm telling you, that's what your government is.
Just briefly, what Danny was a reporter?
Yes.
A writer?
Right.
And he was just said, you know, okay.
He was trying to uncover and expose, you know, some people in power and do damage to what makes them powerful.
What are you looking for, Greg?
My bag. Oh, here it is.
You know, we're talking about stuff that, you know, it's very easy for them to say, oh, that Walter, what an idiot, you know, and just laugh it off, you know. Because we're talking about very high conceptual things here. I mean, you know, time travel, UFOs, the things that, we take very seriously.
That's just monks chanting.
Certainly I do. Seems silly to a lot of these people. And they've got the culpable deniability just because of the nature of the subject matter. We're not talking about such and such politician who, according to this record, made this. When you get into the little details of stuff like that, yeah, people want to kill you. You know, but when you're talking about these
conceptual,
you know, a pair of eyeglasses, you know, it could be true, but because of the form in which I'm discussing it, I'm making myself look like a wacko.
What do you mean? The form that you're discussing it?
In an open public form, like, you know, we're on a radio station, we're some, you know, regular guys talking about this stuff, and, you know, listeners. I mean, it's they have their culpable deniability. They can just say, he's nuts, he doesn't know what he's talking about. And then the next time, you know, my source sees me, he says, you idiot. What are you talking about that stuff for? So, no, I'm not worried that
Have you ever been told that?
No. Never.
What else was found in that cave?
We were going furniture?
Thread.
I gotta pee. Where do I do that?
Right across the hallway, Ralph. If the door isn't open, come back in and I'll give you the key. What else was found in this cave, which was...
Furnishings, other various relics of the signs of civilization. People living there. It was abandoned.
Daily objects, you mean?
Yeah.
And there was an idea... It is closed now. And there was an idea that these people had lived...
Sounds like I'm in Frankfurt with that particular siren going.
Just a sec. It's all right. It's one of these two keys.
Okay.
Leave the door open, too. You just push it all the way open. Oh, it looks like it is open. Anyway, but these people, or I guess they must have been people. You put on glasses. Glasses are designed to sit on a bridge of a nose, and
exactly.
Your eyes are here, and your ears are
what's
here.
What's ever been described to me by anyone that's ever told me about, you know, that claims to know, these are humanoid. These are human people that look very, very, very... I mean, they can pass for us.
Right.
Out on the street.
Why do they... Any idea why they chose to live so far underground? Because that... Even thousands of years ago...
It's habitable, for one. Cataclysms, ancient cataclysms drove them underground. You know, thousands of years ago, there were eras where you couldn't live on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
Inside, allegedly, you know, the lifespan can be theoretically longer. You're healthier. It's just a different... You don't have the seasons to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's kind of like living in, you know... Southern California.
Yeah.
You know, in December you can get in the car and drive to the mall and you don't have to worry about ice on the road like you do back east and
right.
in the north,
right.
you know. Which I kind of like. I mean, that weather right there alone would be something that would drive me to do it. I mean, it drives me to want to live out in Southern California or the American
right.
Southwest.
Right.
That alone. So, gee, why not? Why deal with asteroids and meteors and stuff, you know, threatening to hit you? Why deal with weather when, wow, gee, the inside of the planet is habitable? And that might be why when the astronomers say...
Planet really does take care of you in that...
When astronomers say, oh, there's no life we've been able to find in our solar system, and they say, look, see our telescopes, you see life on there? No way. Well, maybe all the life is inside.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe all the life is on the inside.
Well, what about now?
Now what? Yeah,
not thousands of years ago.
Well, I believe there's people living under the surface.
Why do you believe that?
Okay, ancient cultures talk about after cataclysms coming up from the internal world that they were living in while the, you know, all the cataclysmic stuff was
every
dying
single
down on
American
the
Indian tribe
every
came
single
out
American.
Of the earth.
Exactly.
Probably every other indigenous culture throughout the planet.
Yeah, other cultures talk about this. Every culture.
Some say they came from the sky.
Well, in some cases they might have.
Yeah.
You know, farther back. Valley talks about in a couple of his books, you know, the wee folk and that's part of the tradition of the people who live under the surface, who live inside the mountains, who live, you know, they come up out of the hole in the ground. They live underground.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every culture has this if you just study, you know, the mythologies, the histories that that, by the way, what we in our arrogance call mythology, they've been swearing is their history all along.
Right, right.
You know,
well, it makes us more comfortable to think that it's a mythology because then we don't have to deal
sure.
with that thing that doesn't fit into our paradigm of how the world is run. But why do you think there are still humanoid type people living under the earth right now? I mean, it starts to sound like the Shaver stuff, which, as you're talking about, it might not be too far off what was going
right.
on. you know, or if more people would know H.G. Wells, and he travels to the future, and there's an underground dwelling civilization. But why would that be going on right now?
Why wouldn't
and we
it be?
would not know about it?
Why or how?
Apart from both. And
okay,
apart
let's
from the
start
fact
with
that
how.
We willfully close our eyes to such a thing.
Okay, let's start with how. Okay, we think we know everything there is to know. If you ask the average person, they would say. And I'm talking about the average person, common wisdom would tell you, conventional wisdom would say, oh, well, yeah, with our technology and satellites and, you know, the way things go and transportation, sure, about, you know, generally speaking, every inch of the Earth has been traversed by people. Well, I think a lot of us know that's not true. But you take a nighttime satellite photo of the Earth where, you know, they do it in the sections and you see the Earth at the same hour.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all sectioned together. Here's everywhere on the Earth at 10 p.m., okay?
Right.
Now, you look at the lights. Basically, the concentration of lights is basically
around
where
water.
The greater population is.
Yeah,
okay?
And around water.
And around water, of course, yeah, because of the ports and stuff like that. But the thing is, you look at the vast, and I'm not talking about the oceans, which make up 71% of the Earth's surface. I'm talking about just the 29% land surface. There are still vast areas of darkness where people don't live, where people don't go,
mm-hmm.
or very few people go.
Yeah.
Think about, you know, and if you get in your car and you drive a few hours east, you know, and go out in the middle of that desert, you suddenly realize, wow. A lot of Americans have never driven across their own country, particularly least of all the Southwest. They've never experienced the empty, vast tracts of land that really are in this country. And when you look at the size of our country, then compare it to the landmass, say, of, you know, Russia, the former Soviet Union, or China.
South America.
And you look at South America, and you look at the huge tracts of either open land or jungle and stuff.
Mm. The entire middle of Australia.
People just don't go. Well, how hard would it be if you were a race of people who didn't want to be known? And you had the advantage of also knowing what's under our feet. You could come and go. You'd have your entry and exit points, most likely, in those vast tracts of empty area I was talking about. And us dummies up here on the surface, who, quite frankly, are more interested in our sports, our SUVs, or even if we're the farmer, you know, living down in South America, we're interested in, you know, taking care of our families and the mm-hmm. crops and stuff, or the guy who owns the shop in, you know, Saudi Arabia, you know, whatever.
Okay, the guy, they're coming and going. Where?
From the surface to below.
I understand that, but when they come to the surface, where are they going? What?
Well, then there you go.
Maybe that's about it.
Check things out. Come to the
surface.
Why
do we go into space?
Yeah, why do we go to look? They could be going into space, for example. I mean, they might have that technology. This technology was written about. Let's discuss Vimana Aircraft of India. Are you familiar with that?
No.
Okay, in the Mahabharata, which is considered the oldest religious text in the world and one of the oldest historical texts, if not the oldest, talks in detail about flying machines that use a mercury vortex engine. I mean, they go into the detail how these things are constructed, how to fly them, how to work them. Your average professor right over here at UCLA will tell you, history professor will tell you, you're a madman, you're an idiot for believing that crap. It's a bunch of superstition. And yet, it's a technological description. So if they had those, let's say they had this tens of thousands of years ago in the great Rama Empire, which is what the book says that they did, and they're not the only culture that talks about these things, then imagine, look how far the aircraft has come since the Wright Flyer in 1900-whatever. And look how we went in about 40 or 50 years to the jet age, from a glider to the jet age, with known aircraft technology. Look what they could do in tens of thousands of years with this technology that was described tens of thousands of years ago. You know, a anti-gravity aircraft to the moon, to the planets, wherever. Piece of cake for them. If they're the culture who has inherited this technology and continue to develop it.
Why would there be a race living underground that wouldn't want to be known?
Because...
Remember, I'm representing the retarded,
sure,
the retarded
I
folks.
I understand where you come from. Let's go back to being politically correct according to our arrogant society. Because aren't we just the biggest pieces of crap you know, on the face of the earth. Look at the humanity. We make war on ourselves. We kill each other. We treat each other like crap. We blow each other up. We cheat each other. We do all this nasty stuff. And if they have been around for tens of thousands of years and have, you know, advanced their society to a point where they've got, I'm not going to say they've got it under control because I don't know, and if
fairly
they're human,
stable.
Human, fairly stable, to where they've got a handle on this stuff, what the hell, would you want to hang out with us? Do we, now that's not a good example because I don't believe in traditional evolution, but...
Are these just theories you have and interests you have, or does this go back to your mentor and things that you...
It's all a mix of that.
Seen or know about? Or
it's, well, it's all kind of a mix of that. I readily admit when something's a theory of mine or if it's another theory that I'm embracing. And you know, this business with the Vimana aircraft is historical record. I mean, it's been in the Mahabharata for thousands of years. The same one you could read today, it's been in there, and it talks about these aircraft. Our friend Dave Childress has written a really good book on it, but I mean, it's not embellished.
He's a publisher of
Adventures Unlimited Press.
Do you have a book with him?
No, I do not. I've not written any nonfiction stuff for him. My publishing company is a fiction publishing company, adventure fiction. And I do write, but that's what I'm writing at this point. I wrote a screenplay in 86 about these kind of things we're talking about, and I haven't published it yet or anything like that.
Indiana Jones and the Shaver Mystery.
No. Actually, closer to the X-Files. I wrote the thing in 86, novelized it in 91. Mm-hmm. And if you were to read it, you'd swore I wrote it after the X-Files came out, and you know, and stuff. But but there was a lot of people writing stuff about federal agents and secret this and conspiracy that before
Chris
Carter did it. But
right.
You know, it was just, I think that was just in the public. You know, it was in the air back then.
Right.
You know, it was a normal culmination of the stuff that was in the UFO literature going on. But the stuff I do now is... I have had an article published in David's magazine, World Explorers Club, but that has to do with an architectural thing in archaeology. It has to do with the temples down in Palenque. There's one with these T-shaped openings in the walls. And I had a...
There's some of those in Anasazi ruins, too, those T-shaped openings.
There's T-shaped doors.
Doors, yeah.
Yeah.
And windows, I think.
And some windows, sure, yeah. And I've had people, you know, say my theory is BS about what I thought they were, but it was a very practical thing. It was that they were supports for beams for floors, that these buildings were actually two-story levels. And
well, some of the ones in the Southwest were multiple stories. Chaco Canyon was two or three stories.
Yeah, Dave got a letter recently. He passed it to me about a guy telling Dave, you were very good to be hesitant about, you know, this guy's theory, because everyone knows that these T's are a spiritual opening so that these spirit winds can blow through. And you know, that's all nice, but turned off by the New Age assumptions years ago, and to me that's a New Age assumption. I think people that built in stone and stuff like that, I as wacky as the things I believe, I still think these people had a practicality about them, you know. And if they're going to go to the trouble to... When you look at these T-shaped openings in Palenque, some of them are in corners that there's no way in hell wind is going to be blowing through there.
Yeah. There was one of, actually, I did see one in Chaco Canyon. It was way up on a wall.
And it's way up. It's like 9 or 10 feet high. So you're not... The average person is not going to see through it. So I still stand by my theory, the one in Palenque anyway, that when you see the alignment, you can read the article, you know. I can tell you which issue it's in. You can read the article. That these were beams supports for floors. I still stand by it. The argument that they were and perhaps I should have mentioned this better in my article, but I did research this thoroughly before I sent the article to David, and all I found were kind of passing comments or a throwaway assumption that the T's, if mentioned at all, were, well, possibly, you know, the spiritual blah, blah, blah. And there's been nothing written about that I found that says we know this for a fact. They found nothing in their writings that say these T openings were so the wind god could blow through. This is still an assumption based on people that embrace mainstream science.
Mm-hmm.
Because anything outside threatens their validity on the lecture circuit or threatens their personal paradigm and freaks them out.
Hey, we're slowing down here for a bit. Let me do something so that I can turn my put the second part of the CD in, play some music for a little while. If you want to call in here to Kill Radio, it's area code 213-252-0998. We're here with Ralph Kuhn and Walter Bosley, and we'll be back probably something like 4 minutes, 5 minutes. Meanwhile, stuff I've played here before, but everybody seems to like it. This is the Buchanan Brothers talking with a song called When You See Those Flying Saucers. KillRadio.org.